This is Twa Teams One Street from the Evening Telegraph, the only podcast as obsessed with Dundee and Dundee United as you are. On this episode, we preview Dundee United's post-split fixtures. We chat youngsters making the breakthrough at Dens Park. Plus, we show solidarity with former Dundee midfielder Glenn Kamara. Hello, I'm Callum Woodger and welcome to another episode of Twa Teams One Street. I'm joined, as ever, by George Cran.
Hello.
And Graham Finnan's here as well.
Hello, everyone.
What a weekend it was for our teams. Two wins, not only two wins, two clean sheets as well. Really unbelievable. It doesn't happen often in this part of the world. And if you want to throw St Johnstone in there as well, they won and kept a clean sheet too. So we'll get onto all of that much later on, apart from St Johnstone, because we don't really care too much about the
Twa teams, man. Twa
exactly, teams. Twa teams. It's no three streets, one river.
So. We're not going to mention St Johnstone because they make you sick. They're doing far too well.
Oh, they make me sick specifically after stealing.
I understand that, yeah.
Top six place, but I just realised I said there Twa streets, one river, but it's actually three teams, one river. But anyway, I'm digressing massively here. Just before we move on and we're going to go talk about United, first of all, I got some fan mail this week, which, you know, you get used to it after a while.
You getting your family to write in again, Carl?
It's actually, because we're in lockdown and that, I had to get it delivered by carrier pigeon, so there was a wee bird at my window, chipping away, opened it, dropped a nice letter off for me from a Dundee United fan by the name of Adam Olesnik. He's 71, he's from Wormit, so he's almost as old as you, Bear.
Not quite.
But he was wanting to bring up a little point with us. A wee story, actually, in fact, a good story. About Tutty's Nuke, if you remember rightly, a couple of weeks ago we had Ewan Smith and Fermer on from Arbroath TV, and we were talking a little bit about Tutty's and how Bear was slandering the barmaids and things like that. So Adam has launched a fervent defence of the barmaids at Tutty's, and this is what he says. Hi, Callum. As always, I enjoyed the recent podcast. Top man, good stuff. Which referred to Tutty's Nuke in Arbroath. It brought back memories of when I visited it for the first time in the late 1960s. This was at the time when Arbroath had gained promotion to the old First Division. I was in my late teens and had hitchhiked to Arbroath to follow Dundee United to Gayfield. It was a very wet Saturday, and by the time my pal and I had reached Arbroath, we were soaked through. With an hour to kick off, we entered Tutty's Nuke. We had enough cash for a pint and the entrance fee for the match. When the barmaid asked whether we wanted anything to eat, we declined. However, 10 minutes later, after serving us our pints, she reappeared with two bowls of steaming hot soup and said, "You laddies are drookit. Get this soup down you before you catch your death." We emptied the bowls in record time and thanked her very gratefully. The result against the Red Lichties was one to forget, but we were struck by the kindness and hospitality received on our visit to Arbroath. Thanks for the memories. So there we go. A nice message from Adam.
It's a lovely message, isn't it? Yeah, and
it is.
Yeah, I've got to say, I mean, Tutty's is all, they've always been very hospitable down there. And you know what? The strange thing about Tutty's is, have you ever, not that I've ever been in it when the game was going on, but it's often a case you can find the occasional football player in there, because what happens is when teams turn up for the game, those players who find they don't get a strip, by that I mean they don't end up on the bench. In years gone by, maybe not so much these days, some of them would be known to sneak off and say, "I'm not watching this." So they'd nip into Tutty's while the game was going on. But we'll no mention any names of players in case they get them into trouble.
I'm sure Adam can recall a few from his time attending Tutty's to follow Dundee United on their travels. So, and all, thanks very much for sending that in. And it's just a wee reminder to you out there that if anybody wants to, it doesn't have to be as nice as that. You can slander us, you can slag us, you can...
we've had that, don't worry.
We've had that. We can't read some of them out, unfortunately, but you can make points about the teams, anything else happening in our area in football. Sport at eveningtelegraph.co.uk is the email address. You can get us on Twitter as well, @telly_sport. Or you can just harass us personally on Twitter. I know George and I are on Twitter. Bear, are you on Twitter?
Never.
No, he's got no idea.
Right, banned. Okay. What's that about? Is that the next channel of BBC Two?
Bear and Donald Trump are on the ban list for Twitter, so we'll crack on. Anyway, Dundee United, we just spoke about it there at the top of the show. A win and a clean sheet, 1-0 against Aberdeen on Saturday at Tannadice. Adrian Sporler with the goal. Great win for United, George, and a lovely, well-worked goal too.
Yeah, it was a cracking goal, and not a bad wee end to the, well, I was going to say the season, but the kind of main bit of the season before the split. Mm-hmm. A 0-0 draw with Celtic and beating Aberdeen 1-0. Coming up against Celtic and Aberdeen back-to-back, you would take that. I mean, neither club's in the best of places, but it's nothing to do with United. They went about their business really well on Saturday, and aye, as you say, it was a cracking goal, because it summed up a lot about what's been going right at United recently in terms of the kind of work rate and stuff. Giando Fuchs epitomised that by keeping the ball in, and then there was a bit of really nice play with Shankland, and was it Ian Harkes, I think?
It was, yeah. And,
yeah. Playing to goal machine Adrian Sporler. How many has he got this season?
Yeah, he's done really well. I think that's his fourth this season. I think he's actually...
He was signed as a left-back. I mean, it's not bad. He's got the quality anyway.
Yeah, no, I think when they signed him, it was a case of he could play all the way down the left side, and he just seems to have hit the ground running in that sort of attacking left midfield position. And he's the second highest scoring Argentine in Dundee United's history. Can anyone name who the top scorer is?
Castellanuovo.
It is Castellanuovo, yep. Damien Castellanuovo.
I couldn't remember if he's Argentine or not.
Yeah, no, he has 8 goals for United. Adrian's on 7 now. So, you know, he's done really well, and he's got the most appearances of an Argentine player for Dundee United as well. So now he's hit the ground running. Giando Fuchs, you mentioned there, his work rate was excellent. To get the ball back, I think I described him on Twitter as a Duracell bunny. He just doesn't stop, does he? And that ball looked like it was gone, but he just kept powering away. And Shankland and Harkes with a nice link up to feed in. And Sporler, and you mentioned it there, George, 2 good results, Celtic and Aberdeen, to get 4 points from that. It leaves United just a point away from actually making the top 6. Obviously, they finished in the bottom 6 now, so they can't finish any higher than 7th, but there's got to be a great deal of credit given to Mickey Mellon for the job he's done there, when you look at it that way.
Yeah, that will. If he can offer him that at the start of the season, I'm sure he would have been quite happy to take it to be that close to getting the top 6. And I know United see themselves as a top 6 club, and that's just the nature of the beast. That's Dundee United. But first season back in the Premiership, you'll take that. And I'm really interested to see the way they can approach the last few games, because relegation is not really a big worry as long as it doesn't go crazy and everyone starts winning. So obviously they're kind of dead rubbers, but they want to finish 7th, and they want to. I'd like to see them start opening up a wee bit and start to give the strikers chances, especially Shankland, because we need, if he's going to have any chance of getting back in that Scotland team, he needs to get some goals under his belt between now and the end of the season.
Absolutely, and you mentioned the strikers getting chances, and Mark McNulty came out after the Aberdeen game, Graham, and said it's frustrating at times to play in this Dundee United team, because they don't create many chances for the strikers to go and get the goals they crave so much.
Yeah, I mean, it must be frustrating for the fans, even though they can't get into the games, to actually see them playing. Yeah, you can understand where McNulty's coming from. I'm sure Shankland feels the same, and I'm sure they've made a point to Mickey Mellon, but I don't see Mickey Mellon changing it anytime soon, George. I'm afraid to say in the games that are coming up, he'll look at, as we've said, there's a financial reward to be gained for finishing in seventh spot if they can get there. And Mickey Mellon will probably reckon they can get as many points by sticking to what they've done right throughout the season, you know, which is playing pretty tight and you know, trying to stifle teams into submission effectively for most of the time. So yeah, I don't see United changing, but I must really be frustrating for the strikers, and especially for Lauren Shankland, who has gone from feast to famine, shall we say, in terms of service. I'm sure that he expected it to be a bit tougher in the Premiership than it was in the Championship, where chances were coming, you know, thick and fast. But I don't think he probably thought it was going to turn out exactly how it has panned out this season, and he'll be disappointed in that respect.
Yeah, you mentioned the the way he set up teams to sort of stifle them and be defence first. And I've had a look at some of the stats after McNulty made those comments, and United are a rank essentially going forward. They're ranked. Yeah, they're ranked. Really near the bottom of all the kind of key stats you want to look at in terms of shots, chances created, crosses from open play, possession, things like that. They're either kind of near the bottom or actually on the foot of the table. But that sort of belies the league position, you know, being so close to that top six. But when you look at it from a defensive point of view, they're really high in clean sheets. You know, they're making, I know it sounds daft, but they're making a lot of fouls. You know, they're clearly being combative and keeping clean sheets. They've had 6-0 draws this season, and all right, it's maybe not the best thing for a fan to be watching. They've had 12 draws in general, but it shows, George, that they've had to set up this way to be successful to a degree in the Premiership, and they're not going to go down, which is probably the key thing Mickey Mellon was looking to secure first and foremost.
Yeah, that was always job number one. And they had, well, they had the defence sorted for a lot of the season, and remember they tried to open up and it cost them a bit of form and points and stuff. And just hope that hasn't kind of made him think twice about doing it again or finding another way to try and open up and score some more goals. But my hope is just over the next few games with the pressure off, that they might just start to play a bit freer and they might be able to open up some chances and have a go at teams. Because next season, hopefully there might be fans back in the stands next season. If fans are in the stands, I don't think they'll pop with that for too long, to be honest. If it's going to be fairly dour again and a lot of nil-nils and stuff, they'll want to see their team attacking. So they need to find a way to do that next season, at the same time as keeping their good defensive work that they've built up. It's a bit of a balancing act, but they've got the tools there to be able to do that with the strikers they've got and the way they've defended. It's just about putting it together. It's easier said than done, but you'd like to think that the ability is certainly there at United to open up a bit and start having a go at teams as an attacking force rather than just one that keeps the other team out.
Yeah, looking ahead to what's in store for United between now and the end of the season, the post-split fixtures were announced by the SPFL this week. United go to Hamilton first on April the 10th. Kilmarnock are next, that's an away trip as well. And then they have Ross County and Motherwell at home before ending the season in Paisley. That could be a sort of decider for seventh spot, the way things are perched at the moment, with St Mirren sitting a point ahead of United in seventh. Bear, it's two home games and a big game on the last day of the season. What do you make of the split fixtures for the Terriers?
Yeah, well, let's hope it gets to that last day, Carl. I mean, there's still something to play for United. I mean, George touched on, there's, you know, obviously they're in a situation where there's no real pressure on United. But I'll tell you what, I mean, there's pressure on Hamilton, there's big pressure on Kilmarnock. Those first two games away from home on the plastic, you know, we've been there watching Dundee when you're desperately, desperately looking for points. You know, so you can bet your bottom dollar that these teams won't be hanging back and as they go trying to get wins, and they'll also have an eye elsewhere. And you can be sure that Tommy Wright will have an eye on the United sort of Hamilton fixture at the weekend as he goes about his business trying to get points for Kilmarnock. You know, and you always do that. The first thing you do when you come off the park in these situations is ask how your opposition, you know, people that are battling with to avoid the drop, how they got on. So, and it's amazing how things turn, you know, in the course of games in the last 10 minutes or so. So there will be exciting in that respect, although United aren't directly involved in that, which is, I've got to say, for Mickey Mellon's heart rate is a quite a good thing. And any United fan who are listening in or watching on a stream, you know, you're not going to be sort of, you know, sweating in the last sort of 15 minutes of games. But elsewhere in Scotland, there certainly will be people, fans across the country, you know, desperate for their teams to do well. So that adds something different to it. And, you know, George also touched on the fact that with fans back in the stadium next season, things will change. And I think it will. Hopefully we can get the fans back because the dynamic does change.
Oh, yeah, massively.
I think fans put pressure on, and even though the manager sets his team up, fans put pressure on players to move the ball forward quickly. That's just the nature of the beast in football, in Scottish football in particular. They don't want to see their team going from side to side and side to side and side to side and going nowhere. You know, and you know what United are like, and especially playing down, you know, into their own fans, you know, and they do particularly well at that end. So I think you would have seen a more attacking United had we've seen Tannadice, a bit fuller. Well, not a bit fuller, but just fuller. She's just anybody there, you know.
Tenfolk, innit? It would be cool.
Exactly. But yeah, that will change the dynamic, and the sooner that happens, the better. But yeah, the split fixtures for United, like you say, are tough games. Tough games. They've got to go and sort of grind out the results, but it's not beyond them. They've put themselves in that position where they are. I mean, the league table doesn't lie. They're there on merit. And, you know, they should be looking to pick up points against all these teams who are below them in the table. So, yeah, keep picking up the points, and then hopefully when it comes to that crunch day against St Mirren, the last game of the season, something to sort of build up, you know, build up in the papers, you know, to a crunch battle for seventh spot.
St Mirren will be battling out for ninth.
I was just going to say that. Do you know what? I don't care. United can have to win that day if they want, because our season's over now. We've bottled it. There was a phrase going about a few years ago, wasn't there? Hibs, that when Hibs kept making an arse of themselves, basically, in big competitions, and we've absolutely Hibs'd it this season. I don't know how we didn't finish top six, but anyway, this isn't about St Mirren or St Johnston. This is about Dundee United and Dundee. So let's crack on and forget about it. We'll hand over to someone else and have a wee cry in the corner. George, before the league fixtures get back underway next month, United face Partick in the Scottish Cup third round. I just had to have a wee memory jog there. They played Cowdenbeath last night and scudded them 3-0. Scottish Cup is kind of the last chance for United to win something this season, a potential route back into Europe as well, something the club's targeted openly, very publicly, to achieve over the next few years. How do you rate their chances? How far can they go in the Cup?
Well, they've not got the worst draw for the next one. Partick could be tough in terms of a League One. As League One clubs go, they'll be Lazine McCall. Obviously, a former or well-known at Tannadice anyway. Be an interesting match-up, that one. As always in the Scottish Cup, it depends on the draw. If you get yourself through, it's all about you want to kind of avoid the Old Firm if you can, and hope that they kind of draw each other and one of them gets knocked out, and then you can get after them the way I suppose St Mirren did in the other cup. They should certainly be putting their all into it. It's really difficult to say, because obviously we know they're going to be playing Partick. They'll be the big favourites for that.
Yeah,
you'd expect them to get through that, even though I do think it'll be a difficult afternoon, because Partick made some decent signings in the past few weeks as the league's back in action.
That boy Declan McDade's going to be good for them, isn't he?
Great signing, Eva. Chris Erskine's back there, though.
Yeah, yeah. No, they do. They've got good talent in their squad, definitely, you say.
I always liked Squiddy, as he was known.
Squiddy?
Or still known. He's no dead. he's still known as that. He's one that dropped down to East. I think it was East Kilbride he dropped down to. But obviously, they're not playing, so a lot of the league clubs have...
You've seen that a wee bit. Like, I think Ryan Stevenson's ended up at Albion Rovers, hasn't he?
He was at Wards. Ryan Stevenson's been around the junior clubs in this year as well, I think, you know.
So, you know, you've seen a lot of kind of decent quality players coming back into the leagues. Paul Payton signed at Airdrie as well, I think. Definitely going to be some interesting matchups there. Interesting matchup in the dugout as well. You mentioned Ian McCall going up against Mickey Mellon. Mickey Mellon, who actually has a book out, unbelievably. I don't know why I said unbelievably. It makes me sound like I think he's an absolute thicko or something, but he's not. He's a lovely man. But he's co-authored it with Phil Denton, who's a head teacher from down the Wirral, down that way, when Mickey was a manager at Tranmere Rovers. It's called The First 100 Days, Lessons in Leadership from the Football Bosses. So Mickey and Phil have gone about the country. It sounds like a sitcom now. Mickey and Phil have gone around the country. and then spoken to some of the top managers in English football, particularly Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, Sam Allardyce, Davy Moyes, Sean Dyche, and a lot of other different people from the world of football and coaching and management. There's also going to be a chapter in there on Mickey's first 100 days at Dundee United, which I'm sure will be interesting. I've pre-ordered it on Amazon, so if my delivery driver's listening to this on Friday and it's still no here, get your finger out, because I expect it tomorrow on Thursday. It's been pre-ordered for a long time. The money's been taken out of my account. I want the book. It sounds like it's going to be an interesting read, Bear, particularly that section about United, to give you a real insight into what Mickey Mellon's actually had to do at Tannadice.
Yeah. I mean, the thought process behind it all is going to be really interesting. And I've got to say, a book's only as good as its promotion, and whoever's been promoting this book's done really well, because that's all I've heard about for the past 2 weeks, Mickey Mellon's book. So I'll probably do really well, Callum. And I've got to say, once you're finished reading it, can you send it to me and I'll read it after you, because I'm certainly no buying it. But no, it looks, you know, the first 100 days at Tannadice, especially given the circumstances of how things have panned out this season, it'll be interesting to see, you know, what his thoughts were and where his mind was at. Because the manager always comes across as though he's in complete control. And that's the way Mickey Mellon, he's always a guy that you listen to at press conferences and he sounds calm and assured, and, you know, he knows exactly where he's going. But I'm just wondering if he reveals a bit more in the book and, you know, just how difficult it was coming to a new club, and then suddenly you find yourself having to deal with the effects of the pandemic. You know, the club's back up in the top flight, no fans at the games, how you deal with players, you know, and dealing with different aspects as a player's having to, you know, be in a bubble, et cetera, all young men, you know, things like that. And it's obviously got the other things thrown in with top manager Solskjaer, Allardyce, Moyes and Dyche. So I'm sure it will be. I mean, I'm only pulling your leg. I mean, it does sound like an interesting book, but the fact that you're actually getting it, I'll just wait till you're finished with it.
Yeah, mate, no, to be honest, I think I've went and had a check. I think it's actually sold out on yeah. Amazon and in bookshops. Good. And things like that. So it's obviously yeah. going well. I'll be sure to give it a wipe down with some antibacterial and get it sent your way. Just lob it through the window on my way by in one of my lockdown walks. But yeah, no, good luck to Mickey and Phil with the launch of that. I'm really looking forward to giving that a read, and I'm sure there's plenty United fans out there who are the same. It's a bit of a frenetic show today, but we're going to keep moving and look at a few other issues before we go on to talk about Dundee. Season ticket sales at Tannadice, they're on sale already for the new campaign 2021-2022. There's been a price freeze for the initial loyalty period until April the 30th. An early bird period will then come in place from May 3rd to the 31st. And then there is the standard sales period from the 2nd of June, where supporters can actually make use of a credit scheme for games they missed last season. George, quite a lot to take in there with United's offers, but, you know, a reasonably fair offering given the situation and what, you know, financially difficult, not just for you know, everyday people like you and I and like the fans, but for football clubs as well.
Yeah, and obviously they've just had a season, or people, the fans have just had a season where they've not been able to get to any of the games, even if they've bought a season ticket. So that'll be in the minds of people going to buy next season's one, I would imagine. There'll be a lot of people that just buy them anyway, because they always have and they want to support the club and stuff like that, which is fantastic. But there'll be quite a few, I would imagine, that are kind of holding fire to see how things go over the next few weeks.
Yeah.
And I think the clubs have to take that into consideration, I would say, in terms of the way they're pricing these things, because it's a tricky balance sometimes, of how much you charge for a season ticket and in terms of how much people are willing to pay, really, and how much, because it's still up here because we don't have the big massive TV deals. It's still a massive part of club's finances, yeah. Is getting that season ticket money in nice and early. The early bird. That's the word I'm looking for. I'm looking out the window, there's loads of birds flying around. I can't even remember the word. But it's still a big part of club finances. It's getting that big chunk of money in quite nice and early. So it's always a balance, I would say. But yeah. It's roundabout. The price freeze, it's difficult to justify going over and putting the price up, to be honest, if there's no absolute guarantee that fans are going to be in this time around.
Yeah, elsewhere, one little thing to wrap up before we move on and speak about the Dark Blues. A mini loan report. There was Scottish Cup games this week. second round games. Falkirk were in action, of course. Kai Fotheringham and Lewis Nielsen, Dundee United youngsters, are on loan at the Falkirk Stadium. They took on Arbroath and won 2-1, with Kai actually scoring the winner with a few minutes to go, set up by Lewis. So that was great news for the United Academy, and it's good to see two young players there actually going out, playing at a decent level, and having success already.
Well, these guys must have been thinking that their seasons might have been over, Callum, the way things were moving on. You know, you wondered if these leagues would actually get going again. So it's brilliant for them, and the fact I've actually gone right into the team and I've been involved, and Kai, you obviously getting his name on the score sheet. Fantastic, you know, and we'll be keeping an eye on them between now and the end of the season, because, you know, they do well at Falkirk. You know, Falkirk are pushing for the championship, that League One championship, so go there, do well, and get themselves ready, you know, prepared to come and have a real push at getting into the United first team next season.
Yeah, George, feels like there's a real good batch of Dundonian talent coming through on both sides of the street at the moment.
Yeah, that bodes well for the future, certainly. And United, so we've spoken about this a few times, about how much United, the kind of resources they're putting into the youth setup, it's really good to see. It's heartening, in a way. It's certainly the way I think Scottish football clubs should be gearing up to bring through their own talent and go from there. It was fantastic to see the names pop up. It's a big game. I mean, going away to Arbroath are a good team that have obviously been playing. They've been in really good form this season, or this year, since the turn of the year. So they're no mugs. It's not an easy game, that, for Falkirk heading there. So
no, absolutely.
Good on them.
Yep, okay, we've had one clean sheet, one victory. Let's go round again. The famous words of Average White Band, a fantastic Dundonian group I've been listening to quite a bit recently. And let's jump over the street and talk about Dundee and their fantastic win over Alloa. That Average White Band reference, do you like that, Bear? Is that someone you grew up listening to? Or?
No, they weren't one of my favourites. I was aware they were a Dundee band, but... No, I've not got any of their LPs down the stairs, Callum.
Nah, all right.
Nice try, Callum. Nice try.
I tried my best. I always do. Yeah. Anyway, back to the football. Good win for Dundee, as we mentioned. Lee Ashcroft getting a double. Max Anderson on the score sheet again at Recreation Park on Friday night. Impressed with that performance, George?
Very much so. It was night and day from the performance against Ayr, certainly. I know that, I mean, obviously you weren't here last week, but we were talking about how after that performance, that if it had been another club or another board, they may well have been thinking about changing their manager after that. It was one of those kind of, it felt like one of those nights, but suddenly, just 3 days later, and it's a completely different Dundee team. And obviously, one that's still fighting for the manager, as Lee Wilkie said in his column this week, which I think is clear to see. It's good to see as well. I mean, it's only one result and doesn't fix all the problems Dundee have had this season, but it gives us an inkling that there is a way for them to do that going into the last few games of the season. That just by the manner of the result, the way they went about it, the clean sheet, I think, is massive.
Yeah,
because that's obviously been a problem for them this season. If they can kind of bottle that display performance and kind of bring it out again, particularly on Saturday, following up these good results has been a problem for Dundee so far this season. Thinking of the Hearts game at the start of the year. So if they can play that like that again and get a win against the film and it ends on Saturday, then there might be no stopping them from this point. which seems amazing that last week they were so bad against there, but it really felt different on Friday.
That's wildly optimistic, George, I have to say. there'll be no stopping them. That's I like it, though.
Never know.
I like it.
Second place is just sitting there waiting for somebody to take it. So yep, why not Dundee? With the quality of Dundee you've got, if they can start keeping clean sheets, then I think they'll be in good shape.
Yeah, they've certainly started to pick up the pieces. Ah, get it? Average White Band? Anyway, I'll stop. I promise.
No.
Somebody out there will be appreciating this.
Stop where you're drawn.
but it's a win, Bear, that does strengthen Dundee's position in the playoffs. George mentions it there. They've got a big game this Saturday at Dens against Dunfermline. And of course, Dunfermline still have to play Raith Rovers. It's getting very tight at that top part of the table. Dundee start to have to, you know, take advantage of that now.
Yeah, well, average Dundee were not at all on Friday.
There we go.
Just to keep it going, Callum, yeah. I've written that down, George. Might be no stopping them in your reference to Dundee. We'll keep that on file. Keep that on file, Callum. Might be no stopping them. You just don't know what to expect from Dundee, Callum.
That's the problem, yeah.
This is the big issue. I mean, so poor against Ayr United. Then they come out on Friday, and right from the first whistle, they were terrific. They moved the ball with pace. They moved the ball with purpose. They got down the lines. They got balls in the box. They created chances. They looked solid at the back. Now, obviously, I think I've said in previous podcasts that, you know, I'm starting to come round to plastic pitches because Dens has been so poor this season,
yeah.
which is, you know, normally Dens is in pretty good shape throughout the year, but it's been so poor. Dundee actually looked better on the plastic. You know, they have got good players at Dens, but I think they've been hampered by the surfaces they've been playing on. But at Alloa on Friday, they moved it really quickly, and Alloa are a decent side, especially at home, but they were playing second fiddle to Dundee all night, and it was a terrific, terrific all-round performance, and I was just concerned they weren't going to get the goals or play merited, but credit to Big Ashcroft, who I thought was absolutely outstanding on the night. And, you know, and the good thing is, again, you go back to it, and George touched on it, the clean sheet. Now, the fact that that's 2 and 3 games, are Dundee beginning to do something right because they've struggled for clean sheets this season? You know, if you get one, you sometimes go, well, maybe they were just a bit fortunate that day, but the fact I've got 2 and 3 now, has a penny finally dropped on how they're defending this season? The keepers come in, Legsden's had another solid game. You know, he never did it. I mean, he did, everyone was competent. You know, he never did any silly things. You know, he punched when he had to punch the ball. He just kept the ball out the net. He obviously communicates well with the back four. I thought that young Sam Fisher was impressive again at the back for a kid to come in and play at that level and play against a physical team like Alloa. You know they're big lads. What I saw late in the game, and I think Dundee were actually, I'm not sure, I might have just been 2-0 at the time. They were certainly 2-0. I might have been 3-0. But Alloa went on the tack, and Sam Fisher came across the cover, and he put in a crunching tackle on the Alloa player, and the ball actually came off the Alloa player and went out. And Dundee were awarded the throw, and Sam Fisher treated it as though he scored the goal. And I loved that. I loved from him, because for a kid, it shows you how committed he is to the, you know, to playing for, you know, to win everything. And that was a great sign. And along with Max Anderson, really encouraging for Dundee to see these two young lads getting in the team. But, you know, Dunfermline on Saturday, we just don't know what Dundee are going to turn up. I really hope now that they've got their bit between the teeth defensively, because they're at the stage where you can't really afford to go back to their bad old ways where they're conceding sloppy goals and making life difficult for themselves. They're obviously due Dunfermline one as well, because Dunfermline left Dens with a point, if you remember rightly, earlier on in the season when they were 3-0 down with less than 15 minutes to go, which was scandalous. It should never have been allowed to happen. So, but they could go on Saturday, if they can beat Dunfermline on Saturday at Dens, it'll be a statement of intent saying, we're taking the second spot. And everybody will be looking at Dundee now and going, yeah, they look as though they have got the bit between the teeth. Because Dunfermline and Raith Rovers are up there, there are other teams beginning to make a move again. You know, you're seeing Inverness under McCann getting a couple of victories. You're seeing Ayr United, you know, starting to push a wee bit. They've got a bit of catching up to do. They've got this under Hopkins, but starting to get results. So everybody's beginning to sort of make a push, but so it's important that Dundee capitalise on their good win at Alloa and follow up with a win against Dunfermline.
Yeah, and the games are really running out now as well. I mean, Dundee have 7, but some teams have, you know, just 6 games. And it's crunch time. It's crunch time now, and Dundee do have to step up to the plate. But here's hoping they can do it. One man who seems, you know, hell-bent on doing it all himself at the moment, George, is Paul McMullen. 8 assists in as many games. Unbelievable form, really. You have to say.
Well, it just shows how desperate they were to get him in as soon as they found out there was a possibility of signing McMullen. Because, I mean, he showed at United that he's just a real menace in the Championship. His pace is frightening for a lot of defences. But there was also a bit of stick when he decided to cross the road, that United fans say, no, he can't cross the ball anyway. he can't cross the street and stuff like that, which he did. But I mean, he's been proven that wrong, just picking up assists after assist after assist, if I can even say that. And the one against Allah was a lovely wee ball. I think he actually nutmegged two players with it.
Yeah.
There was a bit of luck. There was a couple of deflections, but they got through. And young Max Anderson is a goal machine these days.
Really good talent.
Fired in with confidence. Great. He's been talent. Excellent.
Yeah, absolutely. Been massively impressed with him, I have to say. I think McMullen, just on him, he's maybe one of these players that suffers from, he's got great pace and, you know, he's quite small. And I think people would just sort of, it's easy to pigeonhole him into this sort of wee pacey winger. But he's actually a very intelligent player. He's got good delivery. And he's also really resilient. You know, there's so many times, it's the same kind of deal for strikers. You know, you miss chances, but you just keep going. And there's so many times where he beats a man, but can't get the ball in, or he can't quite beat a man, but he just keeps going and going, and eventually one of them will pay off. And I think that's why people get this perception about him, that he can't cross. It's because he's on the ball so much and he's trying to do it so often.
He's very positive.
Yeah. He's an extremely positive player, and I don't think he gets the credit he deserves. I think if you looked at the championship over the last few seasons, there won't be many players who have more assists than Paul McMullen. I would hazard a guess. I'd say he's right up there. So certainly at that level, he's a highly effective player.
Yeah, I think he was in double figures for assists for United.
Yeah,
last season,
and he's already got eight. You know, in a matter of, you know, eight games for Dundee. So, you know, he's undoubtedly been pivotal. You mentioned Max Anderson, Sam Fisher. You know, the list goes on for good performers on Friday night. Lee Ashcroft was another one at both ends of the park. But that's a position now, centre half, where Dundee are maybe a little bit short. Sam's came in and done really well, but unfortunately, Malachi Fagan-Walcott's had to return to Tottenham, George, and they'll be hoping to get guys like Jordan McGee back and try and get a bit of cover in there.
Yeah, it was a big disappointment for Malachi heading back. I'd only seen him in that a Broth game, and you could see the talent there. You could see the quality.
Yeah.
You could see why Tottenham like him and think he's got a future there. It turned out not to be his best ever game. He gave away a penalty and got injured, but you could still see the ability he had. So it was a blow to lose him. Mm-hmm. There's Fontaine as well.
Of course, Fontaine,
injured.
Yeah.
But he returned to training at the start of the week, so they're expecting him to be available on Saturday. Young Sam Fisher's taking his chance. I mean, that's what you have to do when you're a young player. If there's injuries and problems and things like that, and you're pressed into action, it's up to you to take that opportunity. And he's done very well. Who have I not mentioned?
Jordan Foster, I suppose, but he's sort of out of the picture, isn't he? So
he's been out of favour all season, really, injury and stuff like that. I think if they're really short, then we may see him reappear. But I think there would have to be a few missing, to be honest, to see him back in a Dundee shirt. To be honest, it's just the way things are at the moment.
Yeah, it looks like Ashcroft and Fisher will be the partnership going forward for the next few while, anyway, until Fontaine and McGee get themselves back up to full fitness.
Hi, well, you mentioned McGee. He was on the pitch on Friday night, before the game, doing a pretty strenuous warm up. So he's obviously getting very close. I think he just needs to get the green light from the surgeon, because it's a very strange injury he's got. It's a problem with his chest, shoulder, kind of that area. It's a weird one. So it's not so straightforward to figure out when he can come back, but it looks like he's pretty close.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see if he does come back into the starting lineup, where he slots in, because Max Anderson's sort of taken his box-to-box midfielder role and made it his own the last few games. And Christy Ellis has been good at right back. Does he come in at centre back? It'll be interesting, because I think McGee's a guy you want in your team. It's just where you fit him in and how it best suits the team, rather than just having to try and get all your best players on the pitch, which we know doesn't always work out that way. One player you have to be really upset for at the moment, Bear, is Finn Robertson, out for the rest of the season with an ankle injury. He's one that, much like Max, we had high hopes for this season. It's not really worked out that way for him, but we'll be wishing him a speedy recovery.
Yeah, disappointing for Finn. It probably sums up his season. He's not taking on what we thought he would do from the previous season for Dundee. But Finn Robertson's time will come at Dens, there's no doubt about that. I mean, Finn Robertson's a victim of himself, really, of being so successful, getting in and doing so well, you know, last season. So everybody was looking for him to move into that. But it's probably the toughest place in the team to get in. You know, they brought in Charlie Adam, they've got Paul McGowan, you've got experienced guy like Sean Byrne. You've got others in there as well. You've got Max Anderson, who's come in and done particularly well. And that's just the way it is. But Finn's just at the start of his career. I mean, and these things happen. Injuries are part and parcel of a footballer's lot. So he's just got to get his head down, you know, get the recovery in place, get a good pre-season behind him and push again next season to get himself into that team. But it will come. Finn Robertson's a great player. He's still very, very young. We've got to remember that.
Yeah.
You know, so he's got a lot of developing to do. But he's just got to keep pushing in the right direction. He'll be back in the Dundee team before too long.
He's still only 18.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems remarkable considering how long he's been around, but he's still, well, makes me feel old anyway. I'm almost twice his age.
But he'll take, just on that, George, he'll take encouragement. I mean, I know that Max is getting in, but that'll push Finn on, and also Sam Fisher getting in as well, and they can push on one another, and that's the great thing. If you're a youngster in that dense pool at the moment, you know, you're looking at guys like Fisher, Robertson when he was fit, Max Anderson, and you're saying, if they can get there, I can get there, and it drives people on. You're not just going up there and playing youth games, and maybe, you know, getting out on loan, although that's maybe not a bad thing for certain players at certain times. You are, if you're doing really well, McPake's prepared to play you. So that's an incentive for them all at dense.
Yeah, it does make it easier, I think, when you've got other guys coming through with you. You know, we've seen that at both sides of the street in recent times. You know, United had that crop a few years ago with, you know, Andy Robertson, Souter Gold. They all came through at the same time. And maybe Dundee are having their own right now. And I think a lot was expected of Finn, and he's undoubtedly got real, real quality. I think, you know, at points last season, there was talk of him getting called into, you know, Scotland age group squads. I think he got called up to the 19s, didn't he? But even the 21s and things like that, undoubted quality, real class on the ball. Just looked like he was undroppable for a stage last season. I think that the performance that really stood out was the one old derby when he played alongside Graham Dorans in midfield. He looked every bit as good as Dorans, who's a, you know, a Scotland international guy who's played in the Premier League. So the quality's there, no doubt. And I think he is a wee bit of a victim of having success at 16, 17. And yeah, he's 18 now, but he's still a kid, you know, like he's... He's still so young, and I think people maybe look at Max Anderson and think, oh, look at the way he's kicked on. But I think Max Anderson's a bit older, isn't he? Max Anderson must be about 19, something like that.
Yeah, I think he's a year older.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So, like, you know, he's got that wee bit more experience, a bit more time to grow into his body and things like that under his belt. It's just clicked for Max this season, and it's not clicked for Finn. But hopefully he comes back, because, you know, he's got so much more to give, doesn't he, George? I mean, top talent.
Yeah, he's... quality player. You can see that in the way he very rarely gives the ball away. What always impresses me about him is how often he wins tackles as well, considering he's up against bigger guys who are sometimes twice his age. He comes away with the ball sometimes when he has really no right to do that.
Yeah.
He's been a little unlucky, I think, this season, because Sean Byrne has been excellent, particularly in the first half of the season. Even when Dundee was struggling, Sean Byrne was still very good. And I think that was his place, if you know what I mean. There wasn't really...
Yeah, he's a different type to Max Anderson, isn't he? Because, you know, Max Anderson's more of an Iniesta, and Finn Robertson's more of like a Xavi or a Busquets, isn't he? He's more... more sitting. These are big comparisons I'm making.
No pressure,
none at all. But you know what I mean. You know, they're more. Finn's
the guy that sits in front of the defence and keeps the ball and keeps things moving, wins the ball back and gets other guys going. And Max is the box to box type there, full of energy and getting into the box at the right time.
I could have just used like Sean Byrne and Paul McGowan as comparisons, but I thought I would just go all out and put Busquets and Xavi and Iniesta in there. But yeah, no pressure, lads. anyway, moving on, we're going to go and look at some of the issues affecting the game off the pitch, which really do need tackled sooner rather than later. Yes, we're talking about, again, unfortunately, it's not the first time we've spoken about this on the podcast, racism in football. It's reared its ugly head once more. Last Thursday night, Rangers midfielder, Glenn Kamara, of course, ex-Dundee player, racially abused in the Europa League by a Slavia Prague player, Kedela. Not what we want to see at all. Horrific scenes, really. You've seen the reaction of the players, not just at Rangers, but across Scottish football, and Dundee have came out and spoken solidarity of Glenn. United took a stand rather than taking a knee before the game against Aberdeen on Saturday. Conor Goldson, the captain, who was right over there on the night in defence of his teammates, spoken quite emotionally and quite, honestly and candidly about the situation. It's terrible scenes again, George. How do we move on from this, and how do we try and stamp this out of our game and obviously the game in general, because this is coming from a Czech team, not a Scottish team, that we're dealing with at this time.
Yeah, it was horrible. The whole thing, I don't think there's any doubt that what Glenn says he heard is exactly what he heard. I mean, anybody who's dealt with Glenn Kamara knows he's extremely kind of honest boy. One of the nicest guys you'd meet in football, really. And very laid back, doesn't really get fussed about a lot of things. And you can see by the way the guy went about it that he knew he was saying something that was totally out of order, so he covered his mouth. How you get rid of it, you have to name and shame, I think, which Rangers have done really well. The way that Slavia went about it afterwards wasn't particularly nice, I don't think. Basically, obviously, they'll back their man, but they were trying to use the old defence that, oh no, that's not what you heard, that's, you're making this up, it's your word against ours. That seems to be the way these things happen, and guys get away with it. We can't let them get away with it anymore. That's the thing. And it's good to see so many people across the country standing up in support of Glenn Kamara in this horrible situation, including Scott Brown before the Old Firm game on Sunday, which was good to see that it kind of, this sort of thing can cross even that sort of rivalry.
It's a real real touch of class from Scott Brown, you have to say, to go and do that.
It was, because he didn't need to do it.
No.
And it was good to see him step up, because we get fed up with all the nonsense, particularly in Glasgow, a different kind of discrimination. So it's maybe a step forward in that regard as well. But I think it's really difficult to know how you sort this out, but not ignoring it for the first part is where you go, and then you figure out from there. We'll wait and see what UEFA do. I'm not expecting much, I have to say, but hopefully maybe they can start to find a spine and tackle this, because they've let it slide for so long.
Yeah, I think there's been a real, personally anyway, I think there's been a real mood swing from activism and showing solidarity, like taking a knee, taking a stand, you know, raising your voice and making statements about anti-racism. But it's a real shift now to just anger, and you've seen that in Conor Goldson's press interviews last week, just pure anger at the situation. And you can't blame players, particularly players from a black background, to have this reaction now, because nothing is really being done. These gestures are, you know, they are good to an extent, but there needs to be harsher punishments. There needs to be more education done as well. And it's good to see that the SFA, on the back of this, and they're making this their top priority, they've set up an equality panel to tackle the problem, named EDAB, the Equality and Diversity Advisory Board. Marvin Bartley, who's the Livingston captain, he's going to be on the board, former Scotland international women's player. Leanne Ross, she'll be on it as well. People from the PFA, Show Racism, the Red Card. It just feels like, Bear, it's about time something like this was done to finally try and get rid of this as best we can. I don't think it's a problem that's ever going to go away.
Yeah, I mean, but I think we're very good in this country, actually, Callum, at, you know, trying to tackle it. I think the big issue you've got is as George said, I think it's time UEFA showed a bit of a spine. I think there's other countries across Europe, and we'll not name any names, but we all know who they are, where they tend to get away with a lot more than we do in this country, and it's up to UEFA to either come up with a solution to that or ban them from playing in European competition. That's the only thing I think you can honestly do, if they're getting out of hand or their supporters are getting out of hand, because I do believe in this country, you know, we're not on top of it, and we'd never say we are on top of it, but I do believe that we're doing the right things. You mentioned that education is key. Education is the first thing. Educate the kids, educate, you know, all the current group of players, educate the managers, educate the fans. But I think we do that to a good extent. And I think in most football grounds across the land, you know, it's now unacceptable to say things you used to be able to say and shout 10 years ago. You know, you know, so I think we're moving in the right direction, but it's got to be, you know, UEFA want to play a bigger role in football, and there's talk of expansion to the, you know, the Champions League, et cetera, getting more involvement. Well, to do that, then you've got to get on top of the countries who don't give two hoots about this, to be perfectly honest, and clamp down on them and let more teams in from other countries who are prepared to adhere to the laws of the game. And, you know, we might start moving forward, aren't we?
Just, I think personally what angered me about the Glenn Kamara situation in particular is the brass neck and the brazenness of Slavia Prague to come out and say what they said. Why would Glenn react in such a manner? He wouldn't react like that for no reason. You know, you could not meet a more calm, exactly, composed, cool character.
Exactly.
Not just on the pitch, but the way he handles himself off the pitch. I've spoken to him a couple of times. I'm sure you're the same, George, when he was at Dundee.
Loads of times.
You know, a lot more than I probably have. Great guy. And that reaction doesn't come from nothing. And you know, Slavia Prague have to be accountable as much as the individual player is. And front up to it and take action. You know, it's not a good look, and it's obviously affected Glenn mentally. Hopefully not too much. Hopefully he can still go out and perform to the level we know he can, because he's turned into a real, you know, top class, European class player since he left Dundee. He's probably always had that ability, but we've seen it a lot more at Rangers, and I'm sure his career will only get better from here, and that Cadella guy will be an absolute jobber in Czech Republic for a long time to come. So, that he'll have the last laugh anyway, I'm sure Glenn will. One more thing, we'll try and end on a little bit of a brighter note before we move on. Sad news, of course, but you know, a brighter note in terms of the memories and what a great player he was. But Peter Lorimer Bear passed away this week at the age of 74. Obviously sad. I know
it's sad. It is sad, but
what
you should
a great
reflect
player.
On
what a
reflect
great player.
On his career, and obviously the fact that he deserves mention in these sort of shores, because he was a Dundonian, left early doors to go down south, obviously, and a magnificent career. I mean, when I was sort of just started watching football, Peter was part of the brilliant Leeds side that Don Revie had built, you know, and they were a fantastic team. And the great thing about it is they were peppered with lots of Scottish players: Billy Bremner, Eddie Gray, Joe Jordan, and Peter Lorimer, to name a few. And always remember, you know what a shot he had. You know, a real power. Scored lots of free kick goals. He would have been a real star in today's game. I remember the 1974 World Cup, which was really the first World Cup that I watched on the TV, and he scored a terrific volley against Zaire. He was a fantastic player for Scotland, and it's sad, yes, that sadly he's passed, but we've got some very good memories of in a Scotland jersey, and obviously he's a legend down at Leeds United. Great player, fondly remembered.
Yeah, absolutely, one of the best ever to come out of the City of Discovery. That's just about all we've got time for this week. Scotland are in action over the next few days. They've got a few crucial World Cup qualifiers, the start of a new campaign, so good luck to them. Big hopes for the campaign ahead, Bear.
I think so. They've got a chance. They did well in the Euros. They've still got a similar sort of squad. If Steve Clark can sort out the striking problems, then we'll have a real chance. But it's a decent group. Hopefully they can continue where they've left off from the Euros and take it on. But there's never any easy games. Austria are technically a sound team, Israel have given us problems in the past, and You know, I don't really want to touch on the Faroes because there's a banana skin there waiting to slip up on.
No, I've got the fear already. So a good time to end it. And well, I hope Scotland do well, but hopefully not too well, because I want Lawrence Shankland to get back in the team. I want to see. We want some local people going to the Euros.
Correct.
Go on, Scotland. Three wins, I think someone boldly predicted on the podcast last week when I was away. Was it George? I think it was George. He's not here to defend himself. He's had to leave to go and take a call because he's a busy man. So we'll leave him to it, and we'll leave you to it as well. And we'll see you again next week. Goodbye.
If you like the podcast, we'd be grateful if you tell your pals about it. Or even better, leave a review or a simple rating on iTunes or wherever you find your podcasts. All that really helps people find Twa Teams One Street, and that means a lot to us. Don't forget to pick up your copy of The Tilly Monday to Saturday for all the latest from Dens and Tannadice, or go to thetilly.co.uk to find out how you can get the paper delivered right to your door.